For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Hi, this is James Avera. I'm going back to old school. MSR Cast? Oh, come on. Yes, we've been around for a long time, and we're not going away. This is James Avera from Hellstar. Support your local scene.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 212 of MSRcast, your heavy metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie the Metal Geek.
I'm Sean the Metal Pigeon.
What's up, Metal Pigeon?
A lot of metal, hanging out, listening to a lot of metal.
Yeah.
Going to shows.
Going to shows, getting prepared for shows.
Getting prepared for shows.
Yeah. We're going to get into all that good stuff, but you know when I loved you, man? I loved you at your darkest.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So, starting off this episode, what's better than the new Behemoth?
Well,
a lot, but we're not going to go there.
I gotta say, like, I really think this is my favorite Behemoth album.
I don't know if it was my favorite, but it's definitely the most accessible and the most user friendly. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, yeah, I guess we can say it's user. I mean, it is accessible to some extent. I think it is sort of. The reactions I've seen have been mixed. It's not as universally beloved as The Satanist was.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of pushback from like other older fans who are like, all right, now they're going too far in this weird open direction. But for me, I love it.
I think they've opened
up their sound and all the things I really like that they are doing on The Satanist, like trying new things and having open chord sequences and a lot of space in the songs. They've taken that to the next level. And I think the songwriting is really inventive. I know a lot of people have criticized the use of the children's choir. They said, like, oh, it's kind of corny. I think it's really effective and creepy. I think it works.
It's a theme on the album because they start with it and then it goes back to it in other songs, like the song we just played, Bart the Bell.
Yeah.
And it's definitely anti-God.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just...
They're chanting God and then saying they're against him. That's pretty fucking brutal.
I mean, for me, I think like it's a horror movie thing of like, you know, the two girls in the hallway.
The Shining?
And sort of like, you use that as like a trope.
The kid singing the Freddy song.
Right, yeah. And it's
creepy.
But the way Behemoth used it, I thought was really effective. So I don't buy into the whole thing of like, oh, it's corny. It's like, you guys are just mad that this doesn't sound like Evangelion or this doesn't sound like, you know, that period of albums they had. Those three albums that just sounded super technically compressed and polished, and so like that was my problem with Behemoth before. I always sort of liked them up to a limit, but I always thought that their sound was too
like a big wall of sound
that was almost too mechanical sometimes. And what I loved about the Satanist was how it started to introduce kind of a more organic production and sound to it, and this one is very organic and very loose and breathable, and it sounds like these songs are just kind of like a big breeze going past you, you know. It's like,
yeah, you're right, loose. They're not super compressed, they're not super overly heavy compressed, which gives it that their standard sound.
Yeah,
and I like that they can still keep the brutalness of the band. In a way, the anti-religion stance that they're known for, the, you know, Satanist and all that kind of stuff. But they're taking it on this album to a new level, and I can appreciate that. It's when bands do the same thing over and over and over, it gets really boring and stale.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, I think they had done everything they could do in that old style. And really now, and looking back on retrospect in The Satanist, it really feels like their sort of equivalent position to what Satyricon did with their self-titled in 2013, where they said, all right, we've done this kind of stripped-down black and roll style as much as we could. Let's do something completely different and reinvent the sound. And a lot of people have a negative reaction to that at first. With Behemoth, that album was so good that people just got on board with
and
it.
You know, it's weird. I think we probably discussed this very topic before. For me, if I listen to an album the first time and it doesn't really grab me and it doesn't really, I don't get it the first time, those tend to be some of my favorite albums.
Yeah.
Because if I listen to an album and I love it the first time, like every song is really, really great, I sort of get bored of it after a while because it's so comforting and it's like, I don't know. It's something weird about that. But if it's an album, like, it takes me a little bit to get into, those tend to, for me, to be albums that stick around in my mind longer than other albums.
I think that's generally the way things are. Sometimes you'll have those albums that are so great that you love them, and then you never get sick of them, and you just keep on going back to them. Like Avantasia Ghostlights, I'll never get sick of
them. There's even a band that I love, I absolutely fucking adore, that I can get bored of some of their albums. Halloween is one of those bands. It's like right. Some of the newer stuff, I'm like, oh, it's a really good album. Okay, I'm really bored of this album now.
Well, I you know, a band we're going to talk about later is the Seventh Wonder, and their album just came out. I've been listening to that nonstop just for the purposes of getting that review out, and I finally did the review. And
Where can people read that review?
They know where to go.
TheMetalPigeon.com.
TheMetalPigeon.com. But I need to take a break from the album for like a week because it's just too much. I listened to it on repeat so many times.
I haven't heard it yet.
But back to Behemoth.
Yes.
The one thing I want to say about this record that maybe is not being said a lot is that for all the like weird Queen singing stuff he does and all the different experimentations, like we heard the Gregorian chanting type vocals on this one where it sounds like something out of an Enigma record. All that stuff is
I heard this morning on the radio. I'm like, and where I was getting ready for work, we heard that song.
The Return to Innocence song.
Whatever it was. Yeah. And we're like, how the hell was this popular?
Dude, I think they're good. Like every now and then I want to hear something like that. But anyway, the thing that no one's really saying is that I think this is a more brutal album than, say, Evangelion. Because the thing that's really, I think, the secret weapon here is Inferno. Like, his performance, he is so creative. The drumming is so creative on this album, where he's just not pummeling, you know, like, blast beats. He's reserving them for specific moments, and when it hits with, like, just an incredible force. And everything else, he's doing these really creative patterns and fills and tribal beats, and he's using like a lot of floor time type stuff, and I'm just like,
but like the beginning of this song, the intro of this song,
like what I listen to the most throughout this album has been his playing. I'm just floored by it.
You know, I really like how on this song they're able to do a song about the Simpsons.
Yeah,
isn't that what it's about, right? Bart Sabil.
Did you see that video of Nurgle sitting there reading Twitter comments, or he was reading YouTube comments. YouTube comments is what it was.
No, but I saw him doing an interview while he was working out at the gym.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of this stuff. Press promo videos,
and it's making him endearing in a way. You know, that makes me like the band even more.
If you follow him on Instagram, I think you found that he's pretty endearing.
Yeah,
but he's reading these YouTube comments, and one of them is something about Bart Simpson. And he's like, "Who the hell is Bart Simpson?" And he just throws the paper away.
Nice.
But yeah, when I first saw the song title, I was like, Bart's a bell.
Right.
Bart?
That's the demon version of Bart.
Yeah.
Well, not that Bart's not the already demon version of Bart, but you know.
I'm going to have a hard time. This is, like I said, I said this in the last episode. This is the hardest I've ever had to think about distilling into a top 10 list for my year end list. The competition and the amount of great albums this year has been so much that I'm like having to say, well, I'm only going to have 10 spots. How can I not put the new Behemoth album on there? And then I just heard, you know, like, I mean, and I was just thinking about like all the things I've heard recently where I'm like, this is so good. I can't stop listening to this. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a brutal list. And this is why I only do 10 spots, because I want to make sure I get.
We'll do more than that, but.
I'm only doing 10. I'm only going to tell you guys 10.
All right.
Because I think it's more interesting that way for me to just say 10.
All right.
You know?
So let's move on. Let's talk about the concert we saw the week before last as we're recording this.
Yeah.
An amazing fucking show. So I'm trying to remember. It was like October 3rd or something like
October
that?
October 2nd, yeah. No, it was October 3rd. Yeah, it was the day after,
So Omnium Gatherum, Moonspell, Amorphis, Dark Tranquility. Killer fucking lineup. I have never seen Omnium Gatherum before. I think they blew me away. They were so high energy.
Yeah.
And they commanded that fucking stage like you could not believe. The guys are super fucking nice. They're hanging out at the merch booth afterwards. I bought that the drum head.
That's a slick-looking drum head.
Really cool drum head. It's super detailed. Has like the album, sort of like the album cover drawn on it, The Burning Cold, which is the new album that just came out. Speaking of albums of the year possibilities.
I love that record.
But they were super nice. He's like, the singer is like, oh, you bought my drum head. He's like, let's take a picture. It was awesome. They were really nice. And I haven't seen Moonspell. I was trying to remember. The last time I saw them was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They were on that Blackest of the Black tour with Danzig and Dimmu Borgir. Skeleton Witch and some other band I don't remember.
That Marie, I ran to Maurice and was asking him, like, when was the last time Moonspoke? Yeah. And he mentioned that show.
And, you know, after a performance by Omnium Gatherum, Moonspell are great. I liked them a lot. The performance was just sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't high energy, you know what I mean? And that's them. Hmm. It was just a weird place for them to be in.
It was a different
band
energy.
List. Yeah. Different energy. That's a good word.
I think they're wise to almost not try to outdo Omnium. Right. Just to try to go in a different direction.
But they're fucking great live. They're a killer band.
I want to hear the rest of what you have to say over the rest of it, but with Moonspell, the amount of fans they had there was eye-opening. People had not seen – I mean, there were people who were just there for Moonspell. Like, I looked at them, and I saw the shirt they had on, and they were the enthusiasm they had on for Moonspell. They were there for Moonspell because it had been a long time, and I hadn't seen Moonspell since 2002, opening for Opeth on, I think, the Deliverance tour. So –
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That was at the engine room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the last time I had seen him. Well, the first and at that time, the last time. So it was great to see him.
I forgot about that completely. So let's get in. So we talked about Moonspell. We talked about Omni Gatherum. Next band on the show, fucking Amorphous. And these guys never disappoint. I am a huge fan. I love the new album a lot.
Yep.
And they play like 7 songs from Queen of Time.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Whoa.
Let you finish. I want to hear what you have to say.
I had a fucking blast watching Amorphous. I love that band. I love the new album. I don't care what the fuck you say. And I'm glad they played that many songs off of it. I really am. I wish this might be an unpopular opinion, but I wish Amorphous was headlining and Dark Tranquility was before them. So Amorphous could play longer. That's that might be an unpopular opinion, but that's my opinion, and I'm sticking with it.
Fair.
All right. So what's your Amorphous opinion now? What are you going to say?
So I love Amorphous. I mean, I'm a fan of that band. I love them.
But you don't like the new album, do you?
You know, it's funny because my review for Under the Red Cloud, I made a comment and said that this band doesn't release bad albums. They release – it's always a good album at least. I thought they released just a knockout, great album, a masterpiece. But the new album, I really think is not bad, but it's the closest they've come to mediocre in a long time. And I was like, that's fine. I'm going to go see them and then just enjoy it. Because the last time I saw Amorphous was my first time for the tour for the last record. And it was an amazing show. Yes. They were so good. They were he was an amazing frontman. The band was really energized. They were great. A couple of songs into their set this past show, I'm standing there watching them going, what is up? Like, is it the sound? What's going on? And I'm like, and John's there, and this is the first time he's gotten to see Amorphous. The first time he's gotten to see all these bands. And he turns over to me. He's like, are they always like this? I'm like, no, man. Like, the last time it was different. It was between songs, right? I'm saying, like, this, it's weird. It's like, no, they were way better than this last time. I don't know. If someone came up to me and told me after their set, hey, you know, they were a little off because they were hungover or something, I would have been like, okay, I understand. Because the energy was just not there. They were boring. And I was stunned. I was like, talking them up before the show, going, like, you're going to love Amorphous. They're so great live. It was such a great treat to see them. And I was just like so disappointed. I was just like, what is up with you guys? Like, why is this not,
I did not have that experience.
Why is this not the same thing? And I was just like, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just he and I are tired or something. But then Dark Tranquility comes on and just boom. And we're just right back into it. And I'm just like, this is exactly what I want. This is what's the energies, right? And he's such a great front man. And he's walking around the stage and the band is just super into it. But Amorphous, for some reason, and maybe my memory is skewed, like maybe they were the same way the first time I saw them and I was just so enthusiastic about seeing them for the first time, but they were so boring this time.
I didn't. All right, so here's where I'm going to disagree with you 100%.
Right.
I did not find them boring. I had a phenomenal time watching them. I was like, we're right by the stage, which was, we had a great
keep
spot.
In mind, I love this band.
No,
they
I
were
know.
My album of the year in 2015.
I know. But for me, Dark Tranquillity is, I have that feeling for them. I'm like, I like them, seen them many times, but they're not my favorite band. And
yeah, no, they're not even my favorite Melodeath band, but they, but I mean, just in terms of live performance, like you were talking about Moonspell earlier.
Yeah.
I thought Moonspell was captivating live from the intro where they came out with that lantern and did all those weird theatrics.
Yeah.
Like, and he's, and you know, and John's right next to me. He's a skeptic at the best of time. Like, he just does not like goth rock, goth metal. But by the end of it, he was like, these guys are really good. And I'm like, yeah, they're fucking awesome. And they're just, their show was so great and the performance was great. And the amount of enthusiasm for Alma Mater when they
yes.
played that song, I looked over
and
I left.
Too.
And the guys from Oceans of Swimmer are like right next to me.
Yeah.
And they're all just like really into it. And I'm just like, this is a great like metal moment. Everyone's here for Moonspell.
Yeah.
It's been like 10 years. That Houston's so excited. Omnium is, of course, amazing. They were the same. They had the same energy as when I saw them open for Sonata Arctica. Just they're always that way. That band doesn't know how to turn it off. Amorphis just seemed so out of place that night, and I was just so bummed out. And just thought, like, it's weird. And people in the power metal Discord asked me, like, when I came back, like, how was the show? And I was like, it was great. And I told them about Amorphis, and someone who had gone to a show, I think in San Diego,
yeah.
he said, you know what? I thought the same thing. It was my first time seeing Amorphis, and I just thought, like, man, these guys are really boring on stage. They just stand there and don't do anything, and I don't know. I was disappointed. And I was just like, maybe it's just them on this tour. What is
maybe.
Going on?
I must be that much of a fanboy that it didn't bother me.
I swear to God, last time, they were different. In my memory, when I saw them that last time, with them and Swallow the Sun, they were different band on stage. The energy was different. He was more locked in and focused. And this time, they just didn't seem like they even wanted to be there. And it was
I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't know.
I would agree. I will agree they were a little bit less energy this time, but they were giving it, and I was taking it.
I mean, their sound was good.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't deny what I was feeling there, just watching them getting disappointed song by song. And then the thing is, the set list didn't help. It was a weaker set list than
last
time.
I don't agree on that one.
When they played Wrong Direction, I was just like, you know what? I think I fucking hate this song.
That's one of my favorite songs. I love that song.
I just think it's like this kind of like insipid radio rock-ish style of writing that is just like, you guys are better than this. Cut this song from your set list and put like Bad Blood in there or some other song. I think they played Bad Blood.
They did play Bad Blood, yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I was just kind of like, all right. Okay.
Well, you don't have to wait much longer to see him again.
Really?
Did you know this?
No.
So they announced a tour for next September, October already.
Okay.
So this is where it gets exciting for me. Except the headliner. I think the headliner might be this band called Delane.
Yeah.
Who I saw was Hammerfall a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a huge fan of them, but I don't know if it's a co-headlining tour or what. But the opening act for this tour is Annika van Giersbergen.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Just on her own or something?
I believe so. I think she's putting a new album out called Symphonized, which is the version songs that she's done in her career, only with a symphony in the background. It's really awesome. And we're actually going to play a song off of that tonight because from the promo that I received.
So they're coming to Houston, confirmed?
Annika is going to be here. I don't know what her band is. I've heard a rumor that it could be an all acoustic sing or it could be her full band.
You know what venue is going to be at?
It's the Scout Bar.
Okay.
October 17th here in Houston.
So Annika, Amorphis, and Delane.
I'm going to buy a VIP for that because I've got to be Annika.
I wouldn't expect you not to.
That's it right there.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, it's funny because when we were driving back and I was just trying to explain to them.
And it's the day after my birthday, so I mean, if anybody, you know, it's a perfect present. Yeah, you know, that's all I'm saying.
I was trying to explain to them. I was like, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like last time I saw Amorphis, they were so great. We had two friends, Jason and Kat. They love Amorphis so much, and they were so devastated they couldn't make the show.
And yeah, Justin, our buddy, couldn't make it because he had a house situation, and he was super bummed.
And they were asking, how was it? And I was just like, I don't know what to tell you guys.
We got to move on from this because Yeah, we got just gotta move on.
And I told myself, I was like, next time they're coming, I don't know if I'm gonna go and see them. Like, unless they come with another band I want to go see. So now I have a dilemma because I would like to see her. And I've never seen the Gathering in any context or anything.
Oh, I have once at Milwaukee Metal Fest.
Yeah.
Maybe 2001.
I don't regret it. I mean, it was a great show. Otherwise, the great package. That bill, there were a lot of people there that night. Yeah. It was an amazing crowd, amazing turnout for a Wednesday. That's Houston turning up for metal on a Wednesday. There's a ton of people there. And they stayed for Dark Tranquility. And it was like the energy was great. The pit, you know, during Dark Tranquility was great. It just, you know, it's just that one little thing I had a situation with. But.
And I don't agree with you. So we're going to move on.
I can't deny how I feel.
Well, okay. Let's get into one of the bands that performed that evening. We're going to go old school here. Tell me about the song we picked.
Well, Alma Mater. I mean, this is like their. This is like the epitome, the classic track from Moonspell. So
I would say Opium as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, but this entire album was amazing, and you know, I never really stuck with them enough to pay attention to all the rest of the stuff they did. I would pop in and out and listen to things. I actually listened to the album they released last year,
1755.
Yeah.
It's all in Portuguese.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Just like sound, you know, like the way it sounds. But that show, seeing them, that performance made me go back and start revisiting. Like, I have like a playlist set up right now on Spotify for them.
I really like the album they did before Extinct.
Yeah.
There's just something about that album that just fucking captivates me.
Yeah. Actually, I think I might have heard a couple of songs out there. But the single off the last record was really good. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
But
I know what you're talking about.
Everything they played sounded great. So, yeah, the reason why I put them on the list was like I just think we should. They don't get enough credit, like, you know, attention. Sometimes they get kind of passed over. So let's shine the spotlight back on Moonspell.
There you go. And after that, we're going to actually hear the Annika van Giersbergen. We're going to hear something off the new Symphonized album. So let's check out these songs, and we'll be back. We'll be right back.
welcome back to MSR Cast, episode 212. And that was lovely.
It was lovely, wasn't
it? Nice little orchestral, symphonic, lovely voice mashup going on. Oh, yeah. What's the context of this? Because I have no idea if she's doing like new material, or is it just like old material that she's doing in the with the orchestra?
It's stuff through her career. There's a Gathering song on there, stuff from Ver. I don't remember anything from The Gentle Storm. This other stuff from her solo career. So here's the information about it. It's Annika van Giersbergen with Residente Orkest, the Hague Symphony Orchestra.
Hmm.
The album's called Symphonized. In May of 2018, she performed two career-spanning concerts with orchestral arrangements together with Residente Orkest, The Hague. Fans came over from all over the world to hear this crossover collaboration, and it's going to be a live album. Let's see, CD, Digipak, 2LP vinyl, and digital.
So the Hague is the famous international court, like criminal court, where they bring like war criminals and stuff. It's like the prison and the court, right? The Hague. I didn't realize they had their own orchestra or something.
I don't think it's the same thing.
Well, because I know it's based in it's in the Netherlands, I believe, the actual building. So that's weird.
Yeah, possibly. So the Hague Orchestra was founded by its first principal conductor in 1904, and it attracted composers like Richard Strauss, Igor Stravinsky, and Maurice Ravel. So pretty big.
Fancy. Yeah.
Fancy. Fancy for a metal person.
Yeah, that's cool.
She's not really super metal, but
I think she's probably like one of those people who's like well known enough in her own country.
Oh, she's huge over there.
Because
huge.
She can transcend the kind of she can become a mainstream. She looks good on TV, basically what I'm trying to say. She can be fit in and do performances with anyone on their national television.
She looks good on anything. That's all I'm saying.
She can go in front of a metal band and she wants
right.
to, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah. She does.
Yeah.
She's one of my favorite vocalists of all time.
She sounds great.
Never met her. That's gonna change.
Yeah.
But you know, she seems really down to earth, like
the rarity of her touring the United States.
Yes.
That's very yeah, that's something.
Very true.
Yeah.
I never thought that would actually happen.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Maybe they'll do Her Alone together because they do that song on the live album they put out last year, Morpheus.
That would be cool. We'll have to watch for that.
I love that version of that song. Amazing. Yeah, the album comes out November 16th, so there's your first sample of it. It's pretty cool.
Nice. All right.
Yeah, nice little...
I will be checking this out for sure because I like what I heard.
So yeah, there's 11 songs. There's Gentle Storm songs on there. Gathering, couple Gathering songs, and looks like a couple of original stuff and a cover, it looks like. So yeah, looks good.
What's the cover?
Well, it says Amity, but that was in a Gathering song. I didn't know. I didn't realize that was a cover originally.
I didn't realize that either.
It says Lorraineville, maybe.
Huh, okay.
Maybe we just don't know.
Yeah.
There you go. Here's Annika for you. And before Annika, we had Moonspell.
Yeah.
Alma Mater. We should have played the cover version of that song that we just heard earlier.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
I would prefer the original because I think the guitars are more appropriate, but that was an interesting version.
So we listened to a little bit. We're going to play something from this later in the show, but in 2008, Century Media put out this package album called Covering 20 Years of Extreme. So it was a 20th anniversary, which that was already 10 years ago. That's crazy to hear.
Crazy, yeah.
So they had bands from their roster covering other bands that are on the roster or had been previously. So Dream Evil covered Arch Enemy. Arch Enemy covered Dream Evil. Wolf covered Moonspell. Shadows Fall covered Only Living Witness. Dark Tranquility covered Sentenced. Grave did Asphyx. Napalm Death did Despair. Cryptopsy did Strapping Young Lad. A lot of stuff sort of made sense. The song we're going to hear later, it's the least make sense version of a song on there, but it works really fucking well.
Yeah.
So, Moonspell kicked everything off. That's their first album, right? Rule Fart?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which,
95?
Yeah. That's crazy, man. I think I saw them first time. They came to an engine room once, right?
For Opeth's Deliverance tour.
Okay.
Yeah.
What year was that? It was 2004?
2002.
Yeah. Okay. I know I'd seen them at one of the Milwaukee Metal Fest as well.
Yeah.
Which I went like 99, 2000, like 2001. I went 3 years straight.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was one of the years. I think that might have been the same year where Anathema played and Soda Macabre, and they did like this acoustic show for the press. So it was Macabre doing like Beatles covers.
Huh.
And then like some of their own shit. And then like Anathema doing some songs, their songs, and doing Beatles covers. It was pretty cool.
That is cool.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I recorded it somewhere. I don't know where that. I had it digitally for a long time. No idea where that is. That was 25 years ago.
How was the recording quality?
Close to 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember how the recording quality was?
Crappy.
Oh, okay.
If we could find it
and clean it up and play some of it on the show, that would be cool. You know?
It would. I don't know what happened to it. I had it somewhere digitally, but
yeah.
You know what happens there, you know?
Right, yeah.
All right, so... do you want to talk about Blind Guardian here?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
What is this? What are they doing?
I mean, it's just, okay, they have these reissues coming up, and I'm pretty sure most people know about this, but they're coming up, I think, either in November or December, the reissues on vinyl of the first four Blind Guardian albums. So everything from Guardian to Somewhere Far Beyond. Anyway.
Battalions.
Yeah. Sorry. But they've been doing these documentaries to promote them ahead of time. I think they're on Blind Guardian's official channel, but I watched them on the Nuclear Blast channel, YouTube channel. And they're just these things where they had a journalist come in with a
it's current interviews?
They just filmed them. And they're sitting in the Twilight Hall studios. And they bring in Tallman Stotch, the old drummer, to sit down with them. They even bring in some guys who were with them when they were Lucifer's Heritage.
Wow.
Like these old band members. They all just sit on the couch and they just talk. And they just like remember like what it was like back then. And I'm a geek for this kind of stuff. Like this is like exactly what I want to watch. Like it's not boring to me at all. But it's basically just the guys talking about the early days of the band and what they remember and how it was the first time going to the studio and what their lives were like at the time and how they changed over time in those first two albums to like the big leap on Tales and like what the producer, you know, the effect, just everything you can think of, like the first producer they had, Cali Trapp, who they kind of disagreed with, to them, you know, learning how to become, achieve the sound they wanted to achieve and that kind of thing. There's four documentaries right now, I think, released.
How long are they?
They're like 20 to 25 minutes or something. And it's just them sitting around, but they have like all these great old photos they've unearthed, and they've included them in the documentary, and like old footage of them like behind the scenes in the recording studio recording the first album.
Let me
ask
you this question. When are you going to start collecting vinyl?
When am I going to start collecting vinyl?
When the Blind Guardian re-releases come out?
I would like to have those, because the thing is with these reissues is they have the original art, obviously, but then on the inside they've had Philip Mikado, their new artist who's been doing their new art, do like reimaginings of the classic art. So where he takes the concept of the art and just does like another illustration.
So they're all
of
gatefold
it.
And all that. Everything.
And they're all gatefold, and so the new art will be on the inside, the classic art will be on the outside, which is a cool little bonus. Yeah. You know? And they have the reissues come with the original version of the album, the original mix.
Oh, really?
And then the remixed version.
Oh, wow.
And they explain it in the interviews. They
so
say
it's, like, so it's going to be like gatefold, 180.
Gatefold. And these, you know, these are pricey pound. Reissues, but they're worth it.
How much are they each?
I don't know, but I mean, you can tell they're going to be expensive because the packaging is super deluxe.
All vinyl is expensive.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
But I mean, just the fact that they're giving you the original mix and the remixed version, and they said they wanted to do that on purpose because they didn't want to rewrite history.
So I know, because we've had this discussion about vinyl and or about CDs, how it's sort of lackluster now and you don't really buy them.
Right.
I was wondering when your vinyl addiction is going to start.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just
you don't have a player yet, do you?
I just bought the new Brainstorm album the other day on digital.
Okay.
And I'm so used to buying albums on digital.
Yeah.
That I don't even think about it.
Well, I don't
anymore.
Buy everything on vinyl. Let me put it that way.
Right. You can't. You can't. It's just not.
You absolutely can't.
Yeah.
I went to a buddy of mine. He had this big garage sale type of event over the weekend. And he had probably like 25 boxes of vinyl that he bought from a collector, a guy's collection. He just bought it for like a lump sum, and he's piecemealing it off. So before anybody else was really able to go through it, I went through this collection and just pulled a bunch of shit that I wanted. I got like the first 5 or 6 Beatles albums in really great condition, which are hard to find. No, not hard to find. They're expensive to buy in great condition. I got some Judas Priest. I got some Tom Petty stuff. I got – well, I don't remember what else I got. There wasn't really much metal. The only metal was like the Priest, and there was a couple of bands I don't really care about, you know.
Yeah.
Like Kiss and Def Leppard and stuff right. like that. But it was that type of collection. And what are you going to charge me for these? Give me the friend discount, you know what I mean? So he's like, he looked everything up on eBay, wrote all the prices out, and basically he's like, half of that, half of that, half of that. This one's a dollar or whatever. So I got a really good deal.
Nice.
A lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had a good day on vinyl collecting that day.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
We went to another store, local Sound Revolution, found some stuff I've been looking for.
You know, you mentioned CDs, and it's like I could still envision myself buying a CD if it came in a nice deluxe packaging. But I am torn. And this is something that I have struggled with in the past like couple years of just like I buy less physical product because it's just so much more convenient to if I'm not completely 100% committed to an album, I'll just listen to it on Spotify.
Right.
Or if I do like the album, but it's not released in the format I really care for, I'll just buy the digital download and yeah, it sucks because, you know, that was a part of it for me with metal was being cool. But now it's different because now I have the blog, I have this podcast. So for me now it's about, dude, you got to listen to this stuff because there's a lot more coming out and you're falling behind.
Every Friday.
So it's like I don't even worry about buying them all because it's just like I know I have access to listen to these. I'm always late on albums anyway. By the time I get them, either it's like the promo's already up or the freaking – they're on Spotify. So it's like, oh, okay.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. It sucks.
You said you bought the new Brainstorm?
Yeah.
All right.
And I bought it because, I was late in listening to it.
Yeah. It's a good album.
It came out in late September.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to it. I forgot about it. And then I saw it on the new releases for Spotify. And I listened to it on Spotify once through, and I immediately went and bought it. This is the best Brainstorm album they've ever done. I honestly think so. And it's Midnight Ghost is the new album. It came out September 26th, I think. And it is just the most like pure distillation of everything they've done. Every song is a monster. Just the hooks are there. Yeah. The riffs are there.
It's hooky.
It's so good. And the thing is, this is a band that I really like, but I always felt their past couple albums have been a little uneven, a little spotty and stuff. Mm-hmm. I really thought the last album that was really just purely great was Soul Temptation way, way back in 2002. Liquid Monster I thought was almost there, but it had some weak moments and stuff. But ever since ever since then, I just thought like, they've been kind of like, there's a couple good songs in every album.
Yeah.
But this one, this is different.
And not just a couple good songs. When they have a good song, they have a really good song.
It's a really good song.
And when they have filler, it's filler.
And if you don't know what this band, I mean, this is like meat and potatoes, I would say almost prog-tinged power metal. It almost sounds like
traditional.
It almost sounds metal. Like it's, I saw someone write about it. They summed it up perfectly, where it was like the sound of Brainstorm on this album in particular is sort of like the sound of like Nevermore put through an iced earth filter, like for accessibility and hooks, you know, where you get that kind of aggressive Nevermore, that aggression and that brutality, but kind of filtered through the accessibility of like Accept or Iced Earth or, you know, something like that, you know.
Andy B. Frank is one of my favorite vocalists. I love him in Brainstorm, and I love Symforce a lot too.
Yeah, I miss Symforce. Yeah, that's over with, right?
I don't know. They haven't put an album out in a while.
I'm pretty sure. I think he might have iced that one. He's one of the coolest. He's also just a genuinely like cool personality. I love interviews with him, but he's one of the best vocalists, the best unheralded vocalist in that
agreed.
Genre.
Definitely. I mean,
people just don't talk about him, but he's just so solid, you know, and this album just went, the first time I heard it on Spotify, I remember doing something, just kind of like leaned back and was just sort of like, damn, this is good. And it was like such a cheerful moment. Yeah. I miss this band being this good. So
we need to get together and talk about ideas for things we want to do in future episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to brainstorm some stuff.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. The song you picked is, or actually I picked the song, didn't
I? You picked this one.
Revealing the Darkness.
You could have picked any song on this record, yes. Honestly, to be the representative. The song right after this on the album, I think it's track number 3. Is my favorite right
Ravenous
now.
Mind?
Ravenous Mind is so good. Yeah.
Do you want to, we can do an audible here. We can play that instead if you want.
No, it's no, you pick this one.
No, it's okay.
All right. Let's play Ravenous Mind.
All right.
It's so good.
So,
but this is great too.
We'll actually reveal the darkness later.
Yeah.
And we're just going to get into Ravenous Mind from Midnight Ghost. Check out some new Brainstorm.
Crossing my life, Ravenous Mind. Falling till I disappear. Crossing my life, ravenous minds. There is no way out of here. Look in my eyes and see. Obscurity. I
And we have returned, and damned if you do and damned if you don't, apparently.
According to Metal Church.
According to Metal Church. Words
to live
by. They
got a chip on their shoulder here.
Apparently. I like to worship at the Church of Metal.
Uh-huh.
So I really like Metal Church. They've been one of my favorite thrasher bands over the years, and they always did something a little bit different as far as like their contemporaries in that field, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have a new album coming out in December called Damned If You Do. This is the first track from that album, Damned If You Do. Yeah. Can't say it again, right? I'm glad they got back together because they were gone for a while, and then Mike Howe came back into the band. One of my favorite vocalists in that genre of all times.
This is a quick turnaround for them, too, because the last one was, what, last year, right? Or was it 16?
2016,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
They did that live album last year.
Okay,
Classic
yeah.
Live, yeah.
So I remember us talking about them recently, so, yeah, quick turnaround.
Now they got Mike back in the band. I mean, full
yeah.
steam ahead.
Yeah.
Pray at that Church of Metal, man.
It's this song is weird a little bit. It has a weird vibe to it.
Weird how?
Weird.
How is it weird?
Weird in this kind of ninth. It's like when I was listening to it, I was trying to think of what it reminded me of. It didn't rhyme. It wasn't like hearing The Dark or anything like that, but it was like hearing a mix of like Metal Church and Exodus or something. Just like a weird 80s vibe to it that I can't explain. Not a bad vibe, just it's very different.
It's more because it's that it's more like, you know, I guess like the Human Factor style album, which is still heavy, but it's a little bit quirky. The song, yeah,
that's it, that's yeah. the word. Because I mean,
they've been doing that for a while, though.
Yeah, but this one was just—it was like maybe it was more in my face. I was a little surprised. I was like, "Oh, okay, this will be interesting."
Yeah,
you know, a cool little video they did for it too.
I haven't seen the video yet. I need to watch it.
And it's like him sitting in a chair, and there's like this like death is like around him and stuff. And
oh wow,
it was low budget, but it was a cool idea, I guess. So
sometimes you can do cool stuff with low budget.
Yeah,
sometimes you definitely can't.
Mm-mm. Yeah, they didn't try to shoot for the moon or anything. They just kept it grounded. So
right, yeah. So looking forward to a new Metal Church album. I might have to pre-order that, get the vinyl. Maybe I don't know.
This year just not quitting because there's stuff coming out in November that I was just reading about today, and I can't remember, of course, off the top of my head right now. But I was just telling you off the air that the new Darkmoor album's coming out in December.
Yeah.
So it's like all the way up to the very end, we're going to have these major releases coming up. Darkmoor is a pretty major band. Metal Church is a major band. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to have – it's going to be
– your top 10 list is going to be
it's
going to
be one
hard.
Of the – I know, and I'm trying to get it done before December too, and it's going to be hard to justify and, you know, having a cutoff or anything. So
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
What you doing this Saturday?
This Saturday, I will be at the Acadia Bar and Grill in near the Woodlands and seeing what I think will be a very excellent show. Carrick Angren, Wolfheart, Morris Principium Est.
And a friend EST. of mine's band is actually opening up the show, Epic Death. Which
I think another band too, Draughton.
There is another band on the show, so which. I'm looking forward to the show because I'm looking forward to seeing Wolfheart and Morris Principium Est. I've never seen either of those bands. Never thought I would see Wolfheart when I got into them.
Yeah, I never thought that guy would tour.
But they're only doing like a half an hour set, which is sort of sad.
Because they're the opener of the touring, right?
They are.
That's fine, though. I'm just glad to see them.
That's what I feel.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy their album. I'm probably going to buy a shirt from them. Support them, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, I actually listening to the last Morris Principium album this week, just kind of going back to it, just like, oh, yeah, I really love this one.
It's a good album.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing them, too. They look they might have a little bit longer set.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And Carrick Angren, who I don't really know, I'll admit, I don't know that much about that band. I know just the videos they have on YouTube.
Right, yeah,
I've never
too.
Really listened to a record. I'm going to make sure I listen to something tomorrow before the show, just so I have an idea. But I mean, I just want to be entertained with those guys.
I wish the show that we sort of saw last week sort of combined with this show, take bands from one and put it together, we could have had a finished ultimate show. Wolfheart with Omni and Gatherum and More Sprint Thieving and Mist and Amorphis together. But would fucking blow my mind.
But both of those shows, I mean, this is the way shows need to be now, like where you had a big turnout on a Wednesday night because they had four major international touring – or four touring bands, international bands. And instead of just having X band by themselves, you know, we both skipped that that Accept show.
And the Anger show.
And the Anger show. You didn't go to that one.
Did you?
I didn't go because it was just Angra.
Yeah.
And look – I like Angra.
That angered
records.
You, huh? If it angered you.
Like, the reason why I didn't go to Angra.
I heard it was great.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
But I didn't want to pay $30 to go see Angra.
I'm not a Fabio guy. I don't really like his vocals.
I forgot
he
was the vocals of the band now.
You know, yeah, and if it was Andre Matos, of course I'd have been there in a heartbeat. Yeah.
And I've seen Fabio when he was with Camelot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean. I just couldn't really think. I mean, justify doing that. So, and then the last album kind of had me off, and I was just like, yeah, come on, come with another band. You know, why is Angra touring by themselves?
Yeah,
it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And a show like the Dark Tranquility Amorphis Moonspell Omnium God, that makes sense. This show makes sense. These underground bands just banding together and making a run.
Package shows,
just make it easier for fans to support you. You know, make it one ticket price to see a couple.
Who would you want Anger to tour with?
You know, like Angra Stradivarius would have been nice.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Freaking, I don't know anyone. Angra Hammerfall would have been nice, or Angra.
Delane.
No.
God. Delane tours with everybody. So.
But I mean, no. But any other band that we don't get to see that often, you know, like. Or just would have made sense to make it worth going out on a weekday night to support.
I'd love to see Stradivarius. They have a new album that just came out.
Yeah.
It's like remastered, re-recorded stuff and like some symphonic shit.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's Elements, not Elements.
Enigma 2.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
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 So we're looking forward to see Wolfheart. You know how much I'm looking forward to seeing him? We should play something from the new album right now.
Yeah.
So Wolfheart just came out with a new album called Constellation of the Black Light.
So what do you think of the album? Because I've been listening to it this week.
I've listened to it 3 or 4 times. It's not my favorite Wolfheart album yet.
It's so brutal.
It is.
It's such a brutal record. And the thing is, I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's unexpected because their last album, which was just like, what, last year?
Maybe into 2017?
Yeah. I mean, it was
early
2017.
Maybe
it was so spacey and had a lot of like different types of songs and different. It had brutal stuff, but it had like longer, epic, more.
And from the set list, they're not playing
songs.
Anything off that album either.
Yeah, which is so strange. I mean, I like the new stuff. It'll sound great live. But it's not what I expected from them. I'm still getting used to it. I'm not going to hold that against them. Or the album. I haven't even written a review for the album yet, but it was unexpectedly heavy. It was like, it's almost like the closest thing I can compare it to is like where the last album was very Insomnium-ish in certain parts.
Sure.
They're Countrymen and Insomnium. This one is very Insomnium Wintergate-ish.
Yeah.
Where it's just like straightforward, just brutality right in your face. And it's cool. And it's epic. And there's like a lot of epic parts.
There's some slower acoustic ill stuff.
Yeah, there is. But
I agree with you. It's a lot more in your face than the last album.
It reminds me so much of Winter's Gate. Just the way the black metal attack is on this.
It's good, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. It's just unexpected from this band. So, yeah. It'll be cool to see them, though.
So let's get into the song Valkyrie. This is another one of the brutal songs on the album. It sort of epitomizes how good this album can be.
Yeah.
So let's get into some Wolfheart from the new album, Constellation of the Black Light. And if they have come into your town, go see them live. Support them for sure.
Man, we got the perfect weather for this show, too. It's all cool in Houston all of a sudden. It's like 60 degrees and stuff.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be like living in Finland.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back.
welcome back to MSR Cast 212. And
thank you. I appreciate that.
Let the killing begin.
Well, the killing has begun, sir. After your amorphous comments earlier.
Yeah, it's funny because we didn't talk about the show right after. Like, we didn't have time to talk after the show.
No, we didn't.
So, and I haven't talked to you about it since. And I actually did it on purpose, not that, because I wanted to just see what you would do today.
What was the look on my face? It was like, oh, this motherfucker.
It was shock and awe. Shock and disbelief.
I mean, we don't always have to agree.
No.
You can have your own opinion.
Believe me, even if
your opinion is wrong, it's still your opinion.
Believe me, the expression I had on my face during the show was way worse than yours. I was very surprised.
Oh. I bet you went home and had a nice dream.
No. What?
You didn't have to go home and have a nice dream?
Oh.
Or was it an evil dream?
Dude, I was so tired after that show. I know I collapsed right away. I was exhausted. So this song is from that this is from that album, the Century Media record.
Yes, covering 20 years of Extreme is what it's called.
Yeah.
So we sort of touched upon it a little bit earlier. You know, bands from the Century Media repertoire covering other bands from the label over the years. And there's some good stuff on this album.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff. But like we said, Dream Evil covered Arch Enemy, and Arch Enemy covered Dream Evil on this album. Firewind covered Nevermore. What else is pretty worthwhile?
What was that band, Brand New Sin, covered
Iced Earth Watching Over Me? That's right.
I guess Iced Earth wasn't on the label at this time. Iced Earth came back to Century Media after being away for a long time on SPV.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, but they were only there for like an album or two before they split. I don't think Iced Earth is on. I think they're back on some other crazy label now. They're not with Century. You know what's weird? I used to know by heart what band was on what label, like maybe even 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And now I don't know anything. Like I sometimes do. For the big names, but because everything is so territorial based now, like bands will be on this label for this territory and this label for the other territory. And there's a lot of one album deals going on, even for big bands. So it's just hard to figure out what a label roster is.
Didn't Nuclear Blast just get bought by some bigger company?
Century Media did.
No, but I think Nuclear Blast did recently too.
Wow, I didn't hear about that. Yeah, Century got bought by freaking Sony, I think. Or Warner or something. One of the two.
I think it's Sony. You might be right. I'm trying to find... Believe Digital. That's right. So, there we go. This happened a few days ago, actually. The French distribution company, for a figure in the tens of millions of dollars... A deal which will grant Believe... majority of shares in the German record label Nuclear Blast. The founder, Markus Steiger, remains a shareholder. The managing director for the label, or for Believe, which is like one of the big German distributors out there. Because we share this passion and dedication, we are very excited to establish this alliance with Nuclear Blast and service the careers of their artists and develop new and exciting talent with their team. So it doesn't sound like they believe in what Nuclear Blast is already doing.
Right.
They're going to support the bands, and that could be a good thing.
Yeah.
More money behind them is always good.
Yeah, and that distribution network too, because I mean,
But you always know how sometimes when a buyout happens, things can go bad.
The Roadrunner being a classic example.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, there was a lot of issues with the Roadrunner thing. But the Century Media thing is even weirder because you can see there's changes happening in Century Media. Mm. Like the artists, they have a new crop of artists they're trying to push. They're definitely aimed at like active rock and stuff. And none of it's really working out right now. But they still have like the legacy artists there. They'll still sign like legacy metal artists. And it's a weird strategy. I don't know. I guess I'm not as interested in paying attention to labels as I was back then.
Yeah.
Because it's just something that sort of seems sometimes
irrelevant. And especially
now
with the digital medium, yeah. And it's sort of...
I get more charge out of buying an album from a band directly on Bandcamp,
sure.
You know, than I do supporting a label. Nothing against the labels at all, but I mean, they're just like us, fans and stuff of the music, but it's hard to... I don't know. I have a mixed feelings on metal labels these days.
Did we talk about the Behemoth tour that we're going to see next week?
Yeah, this coming Wednesday.
That's right. Behemoth at the Gate, Wolves in the Throne Room. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. It'll be cool to see Wolves in the Throne Room after all these years of sort
I've
of
never seen them.
Hemming and hawing about them. I like some of the stuff they do, and then sometimes I think they're just overrated. So it'll be cool to see them live and get an idea.
And I've never seen At the Gates.
Oh, I thought you were there in the 2008 show.
I don't think so. Who were they touring with?
It was, there was them and, hell, I can't remember the opening band, but it was at the Small Room in Warehouse Live.
I was not there.
Yeah, that was fun.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Behemoth, of course, I've seen multiple times, but they always put on a badass show.
This would be my first time seeing Behemoth, and I'm glad it's headlining, really? So they can, hopefully they come with like a more...
Yeah.
Intense production.
The last time I saw them was on the Slayer Farewell Tour with Anthrax, yeah. And with Testament and Behemoth. Like, Behemoth played on. They came on 20 minutes. It's like, oh, come on.
Right. And
it took them longer to get the makeup on than they got to play. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But, and I even said then, I'm like, they have to come back for a headlining set this year. And they did.
Yeah.
Oh, they are.
I hope they have something else on stage, you know? Theatrics. I mean, the one thing you got to give Dark Tranquility credit for is that the way they, this is a small venue they play at, Scout Bar, but they were using a, like a projector that was attached to the ceiling to project the background behind them. All the bands are using it all night, but Dark Tranquility, like, had the option of using, like, they used, like, music video segments, so, and they would use, like, graphics behind them, and it sounds like, oh, that could be really awful. The way they had it done, the quality of it, and the way they edited it together to fit with the music and everything was really perfect. And, like, I don't know, it just, like, they had it timed down so well that at one point they were showing a music video for, I can't remember what the song was, but
yeah.
he got the vocals. They had the vocals timed right, so when you saw him in the video singing, it was him doing the exact right. same line at that moment. Like, really cool presentation to see in a small venue like that where we're not used to any type of thing like
Queensryche, when I saw them there, they did that.
But theirs was way shoddier. Like, Dark Tranquility's was way better.
Yeah.
Just, like, more slick looking, so.
Do you want to talk about the new Avantasia album?
I'm excited about this. I'll say this.
I like the cover.
I'm really excited about – the cover's great. The artwork is great. It's cool that they have another thing with Jeff Tate in there, but I also feel like maybe you could have waited a while, an album, and done it in the next album. Like, back to back, you're kind of just pushing your luck sometimes, you know?
But dude, you got Michael Kiske again. When Kiske's
an integral, he should be in every album.
Yeah, when Michael Kiske and Tobias Sammet harmonize together,
yeah.
It's fucking magical.
I'm really excited about the Candace Knight song, what she's going to do.
Blackmore's.
Yeah, she has. I mean, I always loved her voice. You know, say what you want about that band, that project. I'm a semi fan of it. I appreciate stuff like that, but her voice is amazing.
What about this guy, Mele Petroza?
Well, that's going to be great because I wonder how they're going to use him. If it's just because Avantasia is not like a blitzingly heavy. But, you know, the thing was with Mele, he was on a Ed Guy song way back in the day. He did. We played it on the podcast a long time ago. It was for Mysteria. He did like guest vocals on Mysteria, and it was a good little track.
What about this other guy on there on the album called Hansi Kirsch?
Yeah, so this is going to be, and you can tell that this is like maybe something that he had planted in his mind when he got to do the song with him for the Arion record,
right?
Not like they were in the same room recording it or anything like that, but I mean, just when he heard it, he probably remembered. Oh yeah. We had Hansi
Our
on.
Our voices go well together.
Yeah, and I had Hansi on for on Vainglory Opera way back in the 90s for Out of Control, and it was a great track. So it's time to bring Hansi, of course Hansi, for Avantasia. Why did it take this long?
Right.
You know, but hey, better late than never, so.
Looking forward to it. Hopefully, I wish these guys, they need a fucking tour. They need tour America. I would travel to go see them live. Would you?
They played.
Would you travel in an airplane to go see him live?
Yeah, but I mean, I would probably you'd probably want to go like to say like a Mexico City show then.
Oh, maybe.
You know, like because they played L.A. and New York last time. But that was it.
Ed Guy played.
No, Aventation.
It was Aventation. That's right.
Yeah. Ed Guy will not tour the United States.
And I was on the fence about going to it as well.
Yeah.
But why won't Ed Guy tour the United States?
They tried in 2005 and it just wasn't. They did it stupidly. They went out on their own. Even though it was them and Hammerfall, but they did it at a time when power metal just. It was pre Through the Fire and Flames, Dragon Force. It was pre all that. They came out and just kind of ran into a wall. The same thing that Therion did, where they just you book a lot of shows and you don't have enough audience to.
They didn't come to Texas, did they?
No, they didn't go anywhere near Texas. Yeah.
I would have gone to it if they did.
Yeah, for it sure. Sucks because I just wish they would have waited a long time and been like, you know, around after 2010, said, hey, we should finally come to the States, and they could have done it with a more power metal ready infrastructure of fans, because it took a while for power metal to catch on here and it still hasn't caught on completely. But you know, I mean, what can you do?
So the album's called Moonglow. Yeah. Scheduled to come out on Nuclear Blast Records in beginning of February.
Yeah,
not far.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, Ghost Whites came out in February in 2016. Quick turnaround for these guys.
3 years.
Yeah, I mean, amazing that. I thought the next release from him would definitely have been an Ed Guy record, but now you can clearly see where the priority is. And I understand, you know, Avantage is big, but sometimes I wish Ed Guy would get the attention because, yeah, I miss Ed Guy. Yeah.
Last thing they did, they put that Greatest Hits album with like some new songs on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of lackluster songs.
Yeah. But they sort of been that way for a little while though.
I liked Space Police. Like
I do too.
But you can see how he divides his output songwriting wise. The super serious, ambitious, epic, artistic stuff goes to Avantasia. The looser, fun, rock, silly stuff goes to Ed Guy, and that's pretty much how it is now. You know,
yeah.
You get some a little bit serious moments in Ed Guy records now, but most for the most part, it's all just that side of his personality, and then this is like the serious side.
Okay. I definitely agree.
I can deal with that. I mean. That's what he wants to do. But I feel bad for the other guys and Ed Guy.
So yeah. There's a movie I want to talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just showed you the trailer for it during our break. Yeah,
hilarious.
This movie is called Heavy Trip. It's a Finnish movie, and it's about a heavy metal band trying to make it, and hilarity ensues, and they try to make it to a festival that they're not even really supposed to play at. It's a really funny movie. There's so many heavy metal references in it. There's the one point where they're it's like a live action Metalocalypse in a way.
Yeah.
But not brutal.
Yeah.
Like that. There's one point where they're trying to name the band. They playing for so many years, they still hadn't come up with a band name. Because that's like, come up with a band name, that means we're really, you know, right. We're really something. And the guitar player was coming up with all these riffs, and the bass player is like a brick wall of knowledge of everything fucking metal, sort of like you, truthfully. And he'd play like one note of a riff, and the bass player's like, nope, that's from Creator, you can't play, we can't play that. He's like, nope, that's this band. And he's like, fuck. It's a funny scene.
In the trailer, the funniest sight gag was when they were trying to take the album, or I guess they were trying to take a photograph, yes, of the band, and some Jeep drives
no,
by.
No. So, not to spoil anything in the movie, there's a road leading, it's like a really small town in Finland, right? There's like one road, and there's like one camera box on that road to catch speeders. So the drummer... always speeding, always gets caught. So they're trying to figure out how they're going to get their album cover picture.
Yeah.
So they come up with the idea that if he drives really fast as the picture goes, they can all pose and they can get the picture from the cops later. That's basically it. It's really funny.
It's so ridiculous.
It is. But yeah, it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
I support, you know, anything... Any movie that are based in the heavy metal, you know, experience like that.
Yeah.
We talked about it a little bit on Metal Geeks this week.
I bet that did really well in Finland. Like,
I'm sure it did.
Mainstream success.
Yeah. Yeah. It's coming out on DVD like in November, and I plan to purchase a copy of it.
Yeah. Cool.
This is just to support him and to say, hey, I want more of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like Deathgasm, you know, that was a great movie.
Yeah.
But we do have Lords of Chaos to look forward to, maybe, with Rory Culkin.
Oh, yeah. That is.
It's coming happening. Out soon because it's playing festivals and stuff like that. So
yeah.
You never know.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
It's not going to get a lot of support from those guys
from
Black Metal. They're not going to be interested in it, I think.
No.
I'm sure that even if they privately watch it, they won't ever say anything about it and stuff.
And the last thing I wanted to discuss is I received a book for my birthday that I'm really interested in reading. It's K.K. Downing.
Oh, yeah. I had heard vaguely about this. Maybe you mentioned it to me or something early, like a long time ago.
Maybe.
So it's his autobiography, right? It's not just a biography.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It's called Heavy Duty, Days and Nights in Judas Priest. And apparently it's it can get pretty dirty.
Huh.
A lot of information about what really is going on, what really happened, why he's out of the band, what happened.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot of information in there. I don't know if it's what they call them, a tell-all or whatever, that kind of bullshit. But I'm looking forward to just to find out what he says, you know?
Yeah, that'd be interesting to, I guess, you know, read the book, see what he has to say. I mean, the way it was presented was just that he was just tired of touring and he wanted to retire. And that seemed like a pretty reasonable thing to happen.
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
I'll let you know if that's true.
Yeah. You know, one of the criticisms of the Bruce – I have to return that Bruce Dickinson book back to you, by the way. But
you finished it?
I finished it, and I really liked it. But when I did go and read some criticism of it, and I agree with the criticism. You know, for a autobiography, he really didn't offer up – I know there's – you know, he didn't want to talk about his personal life. And I don't need to read about his family. That's fine. But –
no sex, drugs, and rock and roll for you?
It is weird to read about his cancer situation and not have to hear about, like, how his family supported him.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, you're dealing with this alone. That's what it reads as.
Mm.
And that's a weird thing to, in retrospect, to think about. And also just, like, he didn't really talk about his relationships between the guys and Maiden. He talked about a little bit with, like, the Steve stuff.
Yeah.
Like talking about why they were not getting along and then how they got along eventually. But he didn't really go into detail about how his relationship with Adrian blossomed, you know, like outside.
Well, I'm sure he's saving some of that stuff probably for another book.
He said he
wants to write another book.
That would be good because whatever he does with this next book, if it's like along the same lines of a memoir, I hope he goes more into the other stuff. Because there was part of me that was like, this is a very fascinating tale of a guy who's lived a fascinating life, but I wanted to know about like all the stuff. You know,
the secrets and the dirty stuff, like, but yeah. What happened like backstage on tour?
I took him at his word that he was pretty much just like a boring guy after a while on tour. And I was like, yeah, I can buy that. But I want to know about what is
toxic
going on.
Relationships.
Yeah. Like what was the things going on in the,
you want to TMZ the fuck out of it?
A little bit more TMZ. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you read like the Duff McKagan biography and stuff, like that's a good one to read because he is very lucid and has a great memory of what happened back then. And he'll tell you, like, he goes into details about that kind of stuff. So
really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Whereas Slash was so out of his mind that when you read his book, he glosses over entire years because he can't remember. And he'll tell you, I can't remember. But I remember doing this, but it had nothing to do with Guns N' Roses. It's like, God damn it, Slash. Get it together, man.
Wow. Yeah, it's another record we bought at our friend's place. We got Appetite for Destruction original pressing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you go to that Dave Elfson thing? I forgot to ask you.
Did not. We're planning to, but we didn't make it out there.
Do you know anyone who did? Because I'm interested just to see how many people turned out, because that's a small dive venue.
I don't know. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I regret not going to that show, truthfully.
Yeah, I didn't see any pictures or anything from it online or anything, so...
That's right. About it.
Yeah.
We have one more band to play, but let's talk about our social media. So first of all, thanks for tuning in to another episode of MSRcast. This is coming up on the 14th year. Something like that.
Yep. Yeah.
So if you want to find us on all our social media, it's at MSRcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and also find our sister show at Metal Geeks on all those places. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on iTunes. Subscribe to us there. Give us a like, review, all that good stuff. Let people know about us. Share your opinions, msrcast@gmail.com. Request. Next thing, we had a request on Facebook. The guy's like, hey, you should do an episode on the most catchy songs. So okay. That's something that we're going to be working on, yeah, for the next episode.
We'll have to work on that, yeah.
It's going to be nothing but a Hammerfall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of, I know we talked about Geek and Poetic on the last episode, but they just put a new episode out a couple weeks ago about their favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. And Vito had the best comparison. He's like, the Commando movie, it's like listening to Hammerfall. It's super sweet, and it's exactly what you want. Sugary, you know, sweet, but it delivers what you want. And I was like, okay.
I don't know if I agree with the movie choice, but I see what I can sort of see what he's getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there, check out Geek and Poetic. It's a great show. I'm really getting into it. Yeah, we need to have those guys back on the show again.
Yeah.
For sure. Have both of them come on the show and pick out some music, talk about some more metal stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, what about where people can find you? And what's your newest article?
Oh, I just put up some reviews for the Behemoth Seventh Wonder and for the Vreed album that we talked about in the last episode.
Which is really good.
I like all these features I'm doing at the same time, which is probably not the best idea because it's slowing every one of them down. But I'm trying to catch up on reviews. I'm trying to put all this stuff out. So there's going to be a lot of updates hopefully happening between now and the next time we do release a podcast. So,
cool.
www.themetalpigeon.com and social media, The Metal Pigeon, on all of them. So.
What about The Seventh Wonder? Tell me about it.
Okay, so this is their first album in 8 years. The last time was 2010, and that was The Great Escape. And then he, you know, was asked to join Camelot pretty soon after that, almost. Like a couple years after, like 2012 or 11 or something, whatever. And so this band got pushed to the back burner for them, and they've been working on this album slowly ever since. Which is weird because they, you know, their past couple albums before he joined Camelot, they were doing it like 1 year intervals, 2 year intervals, you know? So it's like, oh, would the time hurt them? Would the extra time hurt them or help them?
Sure.
I mean, I think it helped them. It is a really great record. It's interesting to hear an album with Tommy Karavik released in the same year that he was on the Camelot record that came out earlier this year. Which band made the better use of him? The Seventh Wonder.
Corey Arion.
Seventh Wonder clearly made the best use of him compared to Camelot. And it's just, okay. It's so interesting to think about that Camelot record and how flawed it was when you hear this and you go, oh, yeah, I forgot what he's supposed to sound like, this guy. He's so phenomenally talented. He's such a versatile, gifted vocalist. And in Camelot, they're only using about 50% of his power. They're only using about 50% of his ability. Hmm. And it's just like, you listen to some of the songs in here where the Seventh Wonder songs are entirely built around his vocal melody. That's pretty much 100% of the time. In Camelot, he has to share a lot of that space with the riffs and stuff. But Camelot really could listen to this record and go, okay, we need to do something to change our sound. And
so now that he's in Camelot, is this more of a side project for him again, or is it?
Yeah, it's a studio only project. Yeah. Really, they'll do like one or two special shows. Like they did Prague Power a couple years ago, and they recorded it on DVD and they released it. But they don't tour. This band doesn't tour. The members all have day jobs and stuff. So he even said in an interview recently, he said, you know, when I develop vocal melodies for Seventh Wonder, I do it without restraint because I know I'm never going to have to sing these songs live, like tour night after night after night. With the Camelot, I have to keep in the back of my mind that we're going to be on heavy touring band. So I'm going to have to, and it's like, and when I read that, I was like, that's such a ballsy revelation, because basically you're admitting that you're songwriting with a something in mind of like, oh, can I pull this off live every night? That's why it's almost like it's like limiting himself in that band. And I think that what Camelot needs to do and consider for the future, because they're treading water here, is just like maybe go for the gold and the on the album front. Maybe stop being so this kind of grim, dark, noir fantasy like style you're trying to go for, and just loosen up and get back to what makes you Camelot. You know, it's like you're just they Camelot founder always talks about how he doesn't want to go back to power metal and doesn't want to do like all that stuff with like the medieval themes and stuff. But they've been doing the same grim, dark, futuristic fantasy sci-fi crap for the past 15 years anyway. So like, how is it any better than that? You know, like do something new and you have the vocalists.
Do like what Arjen can do.
Right.
It's all he can go from it because it's all in one. He's created like this storyline where he's able to do that.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the storyline for Arjen, because when I heard this album and I paid – it's a concept album.
Okay.
When I paid attention to the concept for this, the first thing I thought of was that Arjen record.
Oh.
Because it's so similar in some way. In this one, there's – humanity's threatened by an alien race or something. The alien race basically is deemed humanity unworthy of survival. So they send this woman, this girl, who they call their kind of perfect – representation of like the ideal of humanity, Tiara, and they send her to convince the aliens to spare them, and whether it works or not is part of the album's conclusion. So
okay, I'm that's
gonna
listen
a, to that's
it
a very Arjen-ish.
I haven't heard it yet, so
yeah
I haven't even heard this album at all, nothing off of it yet, so
yeah,
this is the first time for me.
I mean, it's a really new release. It came out in like this like a week or two
last
ago.
Week October 12th. Cool. So that's going to do it for this episode of MSRcast. Thanks for tuning in again. And as always, one last thing we have to say.
Keep it metal.
Keep it metal indeed. And don't forget to wear your tiara.
Zoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.